This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Young people want to work, but getting a job is easier said than done. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Do you remember your summer jobs in your younger years? Gigs like working at a mall food court, landscaping, being a camp counselor. Whatever it was, you probably learned some lessons and skills that you might not have otherwise. Plus, it put some money in your pocket and built your resume. Well, today, those sorts of opportunities are harder to come by. A new study out of the University of Illinois Chicago found that youth employment rates are actually dropping, and young people in Chicago are finding it harder to get summer jobs than other cities in the U.S. To find out more, we are talking to Matt Wilson, one of the researchers behind the UIC study. Matt, give us some of the main takeaways from the study.
Yeah, so as the pandemic has impacted labor markets profoundly, you know, we were really interested to know that as the economy was recovering as a whole, so as sort of, you know, the macroeconomic indicators, things start to look more normal in 2021, we were really interested in this question of, well, how has that recovery been uneven? And how within Chicago, if we break down by sex, by different age groups, and by race, how can we sort of see what's going on with those different respective age groups in terms of their jobless rates? So we did this study. We sort of compared 2019, a relatively normal year. 2020, things were the worst. 2020, there was some recovery. 2021, there was some recovery. But for a lot of groups, things actually continued to get worse. So the biggest takeaway, and I think looking at Black 20 to 24-year-old women, there were stark numbers that when you see them, you have to run them twice because you're not sure if you actually, you know, did it correctly, because the number of jobless Black 20, 24-year-old women actually nearly doubled between 2019 and 2021, going from about 32% to nearly 60%.
Yes.
So when you see that number, it's so staggering. And, you know, we also looked at not just jobless rates, but also out of school and out of work rates to see, right? So the pandemic was a tough time for learners, too. People having to switch to becoming e-learners and having to, you know, do schooling at home, right? There was huge difference in abilities for families to accommodate for that. So a lot of people dropped out of school and weren't working. So we look at these rates that we call jobless and out of school.
And double whammy.
Yeah, the double whammy. And, you know, the big question is, so if people aren't working, they're not in school, what are they up to? So we saw that, again, for 20 to 24-year-olds, you know, for Black 20 to 24-year-olds, the rate went from about 21 to nearly 40 for Black women. So again, we have that nearly doubling. So you know, that the sort of overview and sort of our biggest takeaway is that within this uneven recovery that we've had, and in a lot of cases no recovery, that we really need to be intentional about what types of programming moving forward is going to help people that have been left behind.
Yeah, absolutely. So the recovery clearly has been uneven, right? Since 2021. Why would you say youth unemployment is still so high?
So it's interesting. Youth have done worse in the labor market for a long time. And it has to do with a number of different dynamics. But I think if we look at generally how the economy has restructured over, you know, a 50-year period where we have this bifurcated economy where we have wages on a high end, on a low end, we have educationally intensive work, and then we have work that doesn't require higher education. Young people now are in a position where they're competing with older people for jobs that don't require don't require a high level of education. So now if we think of things like fast food work, right? If you're a young person, you go into a fast food establishment and you turn in a resume or go in for an interview, but you're also going against people that have 20 years of work experience, you're less competitive. You have fewer soft and hard skills.
Yeah.
Your ability to sort of come out of a job search process on top is really diminished when you don't have that history, you don't have a resume, perhaps you don't have interview skills, and you're going against someone who does. And, you know, labor turnover is so high in industries like fast food. But I think the big picture of young people being less competitive in the labor market really goes back to sort of the hollowing out of middle class jobs, where there used to be sort of these jobs that we would think of as, oh, that's obviously a job that young people would do, you know, camp
right.
counselors and things of that nature. And
not the case anymore.
Not the case anymore.
How does Chicago compare when we look at the rest of the country?
So compared to the U.S. as a whole, Chicago is certainly a space of that has more inequality amongst sort of racial and ethnic groups. Jobless rates are higher. Out of school and out of work rates are higher.
Mm-hmm.
So Chicago, you know, our urban settings are often the most profound sites of inequality, right? So we have a higher share of residents that are in poverty. The sort of transformations that happen in the economy, they're more profoundly felt in cities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Chicago is definitely in a worse position than the nation overall and even in Illinois. So we looked at this report compares Chicago, Illinois, and the U.S.
Right.
And Chicago across pretty much every measure looks worse for young people.
Wow. And some other obstacles here. I mean, what about rising wages?
Rising wages, so...
No, minimum wage in Chicago it's roughly $15 an hour.
Right. So there's huge debates amongst economists about the impacts that minimum wage has on employment. There's sort of the camp that says that when you raise the minimum wage, you're sort of doing it over what in a less interfered with market people would get. So therefore, people's abilities to get those jobs is going to be diminished.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, I mean, there's been so many empirical studies that look at that relationship and try to measure what, you know, economists would call an elasticity. So is the overall impact going to be negative? And young people have been especially important to study in that because of their, you know, competitive disadvantage. I don't believe that minimum wage is leading to significant, what we would call disemployment effects.
Yeah.
And that young people are systematically less well-positioned in the labor market because of it. I think that, you know, the ability for small businesses versus larger businesses like corporations to pay that wage is very different. So we're going to see a lot of sort of differences in how a higher minimum wage impacts across different spaces and neighborhoods. But
mm-hmm.
largely, I don't see that as a factor. I think a large body of research also suggests that, too.
Well, here's another possible factor here. We caught up with Brandon Hughes. He runs the Summer Youth Employment Program for the YWCA here in Chicago. He couldn't join us for this live show, but he wanted to share a little bit, and he talked with our producer. Here's a bit of what he said. He said, it's not that the youth don't want to work. It's that they have so many other avenues of entrepreneurship. Like, they can make money off social media. They can become a TikTok brand influencer, a gamer, and so on. You don't really need any talents. You just need to get popular. Why go work a regular job that makes you only half the money? So, of course, this goes back to what you were just talking about with some of the fast food restaurants,
mm-hmm.
you know, traditional jobs that we're used to young people taking. I had this very same conversation, Matt, with my kids. I have two teen daughters. They're fans of several YouTubers, and they're constantly, you know, almost envious of the money that they're making. So does any of that line up with your research, would you say? Are some members of this younger generation not fully buying into traditional jobs?
That's such an interesting question. I would argue that becoming popular and knowing how to popularize yourself is a tremendous skill. And I think
it's not easy to get all those numbers on social media.
And I think, you know, if we recognize that as a skill and we look at how young people have the ability to be creative within workplaces, I think social media is a real creative avenue. I'm not saying that everything about social media and young people is beneficial to them and beneficial to their health. But I think that as a creative outlet, I think on sort of conversely, we see that the types of jobs are really alienating. You know, things like a summer camp counselor can be a really, you know, enriching experience that people enjoy.
Right.
But in large part, you know, working kind of a job where you have, continuous repetitive tasks and you're being monitored and, you know, there's no room for creativity, you know, comparing that to being on social media, there's no contest for young people, right?
Yeah, the what you first described probably feels a lot like school, right? Which is what they just left. I want to bring another voice into the conversation with us, Matt. Gabrielle Cavril McNeil is the Senior Director of Employment and Academic Coaching at New Moms. They provide supportive services to moms who are 24 years and younger in the Chicago area. Welcome, Gabrielle.
Hi, glad to be here.
So talk more about the people that you serve at New Moms.
Yeah, we serve young moms, 18 to 24, and they work with us in our paid transitional program at our candle company, Bright Endeavors. And at Bright Endeavors, we're providing job skills and career readiness that really help open doors to opportunity and long-term employment.
You're working with people who also have had to navigate childcare with entry-level jobs. So what are you hearing from them about how that goes?
Yeah, absolutely. Our moms, and that's really what's being left out of conversation, particularly when it comes to that research for moms that are 20 to 24. A lot of them are parenting, which might add to the stark differences found in the research. Our participants are running into not only challenges with childcare and those hours matching up with the availability for the jobs that they're trying to compete for, but also this idea of benefits cliffs, which is really that sudden and often unexpected decrease in public benefits that occur with a small increase in earnings. So our participants are earning $15.40 an hour, which is the Chicago minimum wage. But for some of them, if that goes up a dollar, they stand to earn to lose thousands of dollars in child care assistance with just a dollar increase in pay. So that really forces them to make a decision between working part-time job, accepting advancement, or trying to provide a financial cushion with the support they're already receiving.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really challenging position to be in.
Yeah, talk more about that benefits, that conundrum there, right? Where, you know, getting a raise or higher paying job seems like this positive thing, but in a lot of cases, it could make moms lose their benefits. Talk about the balancing act that would require.
That's right. That's right. That's quite a balancing act. And often it's unexpected or they don't know how to calculate it correctly. And so they are being forced to really ask a lot of questions, which they can't, come up with answers to, especially when it comes to the child care subsidies they might be receiving or SNAP or TANF benefits. A lot of our participants use these as a way to like bridge the gap between their low income and keeping, staying afloat. Housing subsidies come into this as well, and they're parenting one or two children. So they have to decide, do I want to take this raise and continue to move up on my career ladder, or do I need to just stay in this part-time job until I'm able to maybe get the training or the education in order to essentially jump the cliff to where I can lose these benefits and still maintain some sort of financial footing.
And it's such a real-life situation, Matt. You're listening along. Talk more about the implications of this on the economy at large, and on the long-term financial outlook for moms trying to just move up.
So I think there's a really important context there for when we talk about that jobless 20 to 24-year-old, that number nearly doubling is this caretaking role. And I think, the number of 20 to 24-year-olds that are parents, but also for the ones that aren't parents, also, doing sort of unpaid household type, work that's keeping sort of the family unit afloat that, the pandemic, created so many challenges for healthcare. And maybe it's, being the sort of last resort that helps out a family member or becomes an important sort of person in their neighborhood to look after children. So I think that that context is really important to understand exactly why this jobless rate has doubled, because it gives us sort of the tools to be able to address the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Gabrielle, what policy shifts do you want to see to address this issue?
Yeah, sure. I think some policy shifts that can be made for certain is making sure that families are equipped with the information about what it means when they lose their public benefits, what those thresholds actually are. Ohio is doing some work around this and really building some sort of bridges around streamlining benefits eligibility, allowing continuous eligibility when possible, exempting adults from mandatory work activities. So there are some things that we can do on our end to really allow families to continuously have this eligibility until they get their footing, mm-hmm. or at least extending these certification periods that a lot of families are adhering to stay in compliance.
I mentioned Brandon Hughes earlier. He's an associate director at YWCA Chicago, and he works with young people to connect them with summer jobs. Here's something else he told Reset. He said, there are a ton of black and brown kids out here that are doing positive things and great things. And as a city, we need to highlight that because that will lead to employers taking more of a chance on them and not making a judgment on them without knowing them. In your experience, Gabrielle, what are some of those positive things?
Some of those positive things are really the skills that they bring to the job. I mean, just like a lot of us who maybe might have been in summer jobs 20 plus years ago, we were learning some of those core capability skills. At Newmont, we call them executive skills, and that's really the idea of how we organize, react, and get things done. And we build those core skills around time management, around emotional control and stress tolerance, around sustained attention and paying attention to tasks in those jobs. And that's really a place for them to learn and grow at area businesses. So I think it would be remiss for our Chicagoland employment to really turn those opportunities away. That's really a chance for them to keep someone, grow someone in a career field and retain workers, because mm-hmm. that really helps that business and helps our taxpayers who are bearing the cost of some of these elevated needs for benefits as well.
You know, Matt, advocates, they want more funding for youth jobs programs, and they say that getting young people employed, it's also strongly correlated to a drop in violent crime. Does that ring true in your research?
Yes. So there's been evaluations of summer jobs programs that found that One Summer Chicago in 2012 was highly evaluated, and that violent crime amongst program participants dropped by about half, and that effect stayed just for the year that they were engaged in the program. So if you look a year out when that program ended, the effects diminished.
Is it that easy?
Substantially. I think, you know, I think the research points to that. Yes, when you engage young people and you engage them in a way that's productive for them, that, you know, the sort of social benefits and the benefits are really profound.
What do you think about that, Gabrielle?
Yeah, the same. We're finding the exact same sort of findings. When our moms are safely housed, they're less likely to be involved in violence and less likely to be dependent on relationships with those who are involved, perhaps, in violent or criminal activity. They have more robust social support networks and insurance, preventative care. And their children, of course, are less likely to be affected by family and community violence. So we are finding that as well. And they're also engaged in, you know, quality early childhood and educational programming along with their families.
Gabrielle Cavril McNeil is the Senior Director of Employment and Academic Coaching at New Moms. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, the goal of getting more youth jobs could require, well, more money. And that's something State Representative Cam Buckner is pushing for from his colleagues in Springfield. A bill he's sponsoring would move state money to address this problem and get thousands more young people hired. Representative, why is youth employment such a priority for you?
It's a big deal. When we look at finding ways to help young people, youth and young adults succeed, when we look at the reduction in crime and making communities safer, when we look at strengthening the economy of not just the city of Chicago, but the entire state of Illinois and having a real return on investment, we have to find ways to truly invest in our young people. And so I'm carrying a bill that is called the Future Through Employment Act. And what we're attempting to do is to get the state to shake loose $300 million to invest and create employment opportunities and programs for over 90,000 low-income and jobless youth and young adults across the entire state of Illinois.
Yeah, dig more into that. You and State Senator Robert Peters, you've sponsored a bill that would provide that money. You mentioned $300 million to fund jobs. Now, this is for at least 80,000 teens and young adults across the state. Tell us exactly what the money would pay for.
So the program would award grants to community-based not-for-profit entities to train young adults for the workforce and to place them in jobs with partners both in the public, private, and nonprofit sector. And so this is a soup to nuts program. This is not just summer jobs. This is just not just a stipend, you know, once a month. This is really attempting to go deep and find ways to connect and work with our partners who are going to step forward to help us deal with this joblessness issue in our communities.
Yeah, I'm glad you made that connection, because some folks who are listening, Representative, they might think of a job at a fast food restaurant or an ice cream shop or a retail store when we talk about youth employment. And there might just be that disconnect between that idea and why we would be talking about state funding. So tell us what sorts of programs the state currently funds that hire young people.
Yeah, so there are some grants that the state has been able to give to organizations on the ground doing the work through the Lieutenant Governor's efforts and the ICETA program. There are also entities that have worked with the Illinois Department of Labor to provide these programs. But you know what we've seen, once again, is that these are often summer jobs. They're often summer jobs to keep our young people, quote-unquote, busy during the months when they're not in school or during the summer months. But what we've seen by looking at data and analyzing it is that if you commit to employment throughout the year, if you find ways to invest throughout the year, then you get a better return on investment. Once again, this is not just about a summer paycheck. This really has a component in there that talks about training our young people, helping them become part of the workforce. And Sasha, and part of what I said was that, you know, this is going to strengthen Illinois' economy, but it will, because it's going to lessen the labor shortages that businesses are experiencing. I really do believe that the return on investment is very clear. For every $1 invested in our young people through jobs programs, $11 are saved based on research we saw from the Brookings Institution. And so, listen, this is not just about public safety. This is about public wellness and making sure we're doing the right thing for our young people.
Yeah, you talked there about year-round hiring. A lot of young people are in school, right? And I could see some parents listening, for instance, and they're worried that a job year-round, that's going to conflict with their child's education. Or maybe a college student will have to choose between going to class or picking up a shift. What are your thoughts?
Well, listen, this is part of the reason why we're doing it this way, because this is not a one-size-fits-all proposal. The organizations on the ground are going to be disseminating these funds, who are going to be providing these training. This training, they're going to have a real understanding of the young people they're working with. They'll have to come in and have conversations about, their experience, their background, what they may want to do. And we'll find ways through this program to tailor make, a situation for them that works. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about the job openings that we have in our tourism and hospitality industry, and they're plentiful. But the truth of the matter is that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. We have to be able to look at the specifics. Some young people will want to go to school and work. Some folks will just want to work. Some people will want to find ways to pursue a degree in higher education once they're done with high school. We should be able to bring all of our resources to bear to do the things and find the ways to keep our young people engaged, not just to keep them busy, because that's not enough. We got to keep them engaged.
Let's go back to talking about that bill that you co-sponsored that would provide $300 million to fund some of these jobs. Where would this money come from, so that we're clear?
Yep. So we're working right now. We are in the heat of budget negotiations in Springfield, and we're hoping to get some of this taken care of in the next couple of days in this budget that we are planning to present and vote on Friday. But this money would come through the state DCEO, Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. We do think that even if we spread out this $300 million over two or three years, that we have the ability to do it. And we also understand it's going to be a tough budget year for the state, right? There's a $600 million possible shortfall based on predictions from this year's revenue, but we also see that there will be a rise in revenue next year based on those predictions. And so we're having those very intense budget and conversations right now about how we can fund this. But I choose to believe that if we are really serious about making sure that the next generation of people in this state have a leg up, then we've got to do things like this.
Yeah, will you work with the mayor as well? One of the executive orders that Mayor Johnson signed on his first day in office, it instructs the Office of Budget and Management to actually review all potential sources of funding for youth employment, including state funds and county funds. Is this bill, do you see that as working with the mayor to achieve that goal?
Absolutely. Listen, I've had the pleasure of being Brandon Johnson's friend for years. I had the pleasure of being his opponent in the mayor's race for about 11 months. And now as we work together as colleagues with him taking office just a couple of days ago and wanting to work with Springfield on a robust agenda, this fits perfectly into what he's been talking about since he hit the stage when it comes to investing in people. And so we are going to do all things we can do as well. It's going to be an all-hands-on-deck effort. We want to bring in the city and the county and the federal government as well to have conversations about this and actually do the work and not to operate in silos, but to find some collaborative spirit so we can get some of this done.
Earlier this hour, we talked with Gabrielle Caverill McNeil. She's the Senior Director of Employment and Academic Coaching at New Moms. It provides services for moms who are 24 years or younger. Now, she talked about the benefits cliff, and this was how getting a raise could actually make moms ineligible to receive child care credits or health care. Is that something that's addressed in the bill? And if not, would you address it moving forward?
Yeah, it's not directly addressed in this bill, but listen, that cliff is real. I've talked to mothers around my district. As you said earlier, I span the lakefront. I go from South Chicago up to the Gold Coast. And I've talked to mothers in South Shore and Woodlawn and Washington Park about this. It almost is incentivized not to do better and not to be able to get better benefits, not be able to be compensated better because you'll be penalized, right? And that is the opposite of what we should be doing through policy, right? And so I've had some conversations in Springfield over the last couple of weeks about that. I know there are some folks who are working specifically on that, and I'm looking forward to helping them get those things across the finish line, because we can't continue to penalize folks for moving in the right direction. And we got to make sure that people are taken care of and they have the ability to take care of their families.
Before I let you go, Representative, I'm curious what you're hearing from youth in your district about what jobs they want.
Yeah. So it runs the gamut, which is really why I'm excited about the fact that this is not just this is not a one-size-fits-all situation. I've talked to young people who are interested in working in the hospitality industry. I've talked to young people who are interested in a career in sports. I've actually talked to young people who are clamoring for the ability to learn a trade, right? And so it really runs the gamut. I'm hearing from all types of young people that they want to see true investment in them, right? So this is, to me, a salvo across the deck to show people that we're not just going to talk about it. We're not just going to say the words that sound good when it comes to taking care of our young people. We're actually going to do the work and put our money where our mouth is.
That's State Representative Cam Buckner of the 26th District. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This episode of Reset was produced by Linnea Dominic and Meha Ahmed, and it was edited by Stephanie Kim and Andrew Merriweather. If you haven't heard the big news, Reset now officially has its very own newsletter. Get the latest headlines everyone's talking about, along with some fun. Just this week, we shared a delicious-looking recipe from Chef Abra Behrens. Subscribe now by going to wbez.org/resetnews. That's all for today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. There are many people who are with me when I listen to WBZ, my children in the car, but also my students in the classroom. We have listened to reports. And so I think that affects not just what I'm getting out of it, but also I think to see what we each take from it.